The words of the gospel this morning from Matthew chapter 7. Brothers and sisters, everyone then who hears these words of mine and acts on them will be like a wise man who built his house on rock. The rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them will be like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rains fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell, and great was its fall. The Gospel of the Lord. Our drawing this morning is this little house here. It's on the front of the bulletin. What drew me to this particular image back when it was done 30 years ago was the fact that we have in the Psalms a great tradition and a great, I think, honest carrying of God as the one who protects us from all things. And the psalmist says over and over again, "Bless my soul because the Lord is with me." And as the good shepherd leads and protects, God also provides for me, especially when I am most broken. And so the image of the house, I thought, was probably very, very important to understanding that truth. I call this image now sanctuary, because sanctuary is something that all of us, I think, understand in some ways. But I learned something this past week when I found a quotation from someone, and it gave me a different thought. First of all, let us begin with, you know, we build houses on foundations so that they last. Recently in our history here in Connecticut, there's a section of development somewhere in the state where all the houses' foundations are crumbling because somebody used the wrong mix of concrete. And so these $300,000 and $400,000 homes are becoming worthless. And so illustrated by the gospel, if the foundation is strong, certainly you have a place to stand. We build houses as protections against the elements and protection against all the things that come in life. If you've been in a hurricane, if you've ever been caught in the center of a tornado, if you've seen what happens in those instances, the fear we all have of somehow being jeopardized by the things of life, we are protected. We seek a refuge. And a home is very much that place of sanctuary for us. But sanctuary extends in lots of other places as well. We think in terms of sanctuary cities right now, who are being questioned and somehow put into a place of doubt because of the cost that it takes to run a sanctuary city and the unfair, seemingly unfair funds going to help people who are not really citizens. Sanctuary extends not only to the world around us, but particularly to things that we call church. This place is called a sanctuary. And the churches in the Middle Ages, in the early days, all those kind of temples, even in Greece, going back thousands of years, the temple was a place that was sacred, but also was a sanctuary. So that if you entered the temple or you went into the church, you were safe. You were safe from whatever was happening, safe from the invading hordes if you lived in the Middle Ages, safe from the people who would not bomb a church because they have respect for the religious tradition, as in the Second World War, but also safe, I think, from a lot of the things that spiritually get us all messed up. The third way of looking at a sanctuary is a sanctuary of ourselves. All of us have built some kind of a sanctuary for ourselves, founded on what we know to be at least established truth or truths by which we can live our lives. The values we hold as individuals, the things that culturally we ascribe to, the things that our country stands for, all those things we internalize and find there a place where we are protected from the outside. We call that the private self. We call that the place of secrecy. We call it the place of deep revelation. But all of that, brothers and sisters, is wonderful on one level. the quotation that turned my thoughts around this past week. And after I thought it, I saw it, and I went looking to retrieve it to tell you who did it. I could not in any way find it. I don't know if I imagined it, but I'm sure I saw it in the book I was reading, but it's not in there. So be that as it may, the quotation is simply this. This is more of a my version of it, because I don't know the exact quote, but this was the sense of it. This person who lived, obviously, a very austere life, lived in a cave, was perhaps one of those monks or we call them Carthusian-type person that lives a very, very private hermitage kind of existence, came out to say one day, let us never move into stone houses. And something clicked in my head, which is a strange place to be, in my head. But it clicked and suggested something that I had not thought about. Let us not move into stone houses. What could he be talking about? Well, it occurs to me that our sanctuaries of our lives have been built with stone. The sanctuaries of our churches, for example, have become maybe wooden structures, but stone in terms of their content. Each church is an enclosure and stoned out against everything outside of it. Theologically speaking, every denomination has built a stone building church to house its dogma, its ascribed teaching, and the parameters by which we are defined as members of that institution because we ascribe to what it teaches. Whether you're talking about Judaism, which is a very, very confined, defined religion, or you're talking about Christianity, which also has a lot of very hard parameters in which to grow, or you're talking about evangelicals with all of their variations, they too have subscribed to some kind of definition about who they are. And as soon as you put up stone walls, I think we're leaving what Jesus said most importantly about our lives. We're leaving it outside. Jesus in his day looked at the temple and he said, you see this wonderful building? A day is coming when no stone will be left on top of another. By which I believe he was suggesting that we, although we try very hard to control, to contain, and to define God, and control and contain and define how we worship God, and to somehow ritualize what we see as important events in life because of God, are in great danger of losing God altogether. Because one of the very simple truths that the mystics in their suffering for their teaching and their understanding of their experience of God, what they faced every day, was that God is not confined to a box. God is bigger than all of our religions. God hasn't even been closely defined correctly by all a mass of theologies, Protestant, Catholic, Jewish, Buddhist. None of them contain God. And unfortunately, we have sacraments that many times say how God can be confined. In the Roman Catholic tradition, followed by the Lutherans and also the Episcopalians, the presence of God can be kept in a tabernacle. In Judaism, the presence of God is in the temple and in the Holy of Holies where they house their scrolls. Nobody can box in God. And unfortunately, in our quest to somehow control God, or at least control us as we approach God, as we define God out here someplace, all of us are left many times devoid of the experience of God. Jesus said something very powerful that we don't like to hear. I know in some of the churches I've preached in, we don't like to hear this, But Jesus said, God the Spirit goes wherever God the Spirit wills. And like the wind, it cannot be controlled. We started this Lenten series by talking about the Spirit creation, the creative Spirit that brought all of this into being, and how the breath that we breathe is that same life-giving Spirit. The same air that Jesus himself, walking this earth, breathed, we're still breathing the same air. We are caught up, never separated from the creative Spirit, as we illustrated in the hand. We are all a part, always, of that Spirit. And so, recognizing that no one of us can define who God is, how God operates, and the extent of what God is willing to do. We have an invitation, brothers and sisters, and this is my point of this whole series, comes right down to this moment, that we have an opportunity to begin to practice what we have been trying to achieve. And that is to make an act of trust, not faith, because faith has to do with intellect. Trust. As you trust another person, why? Because of what you allow to be vulnerable in you that person can touch. And if it's mutual, you have a wonderfully loving relationship. To trust that when Jesus says something special, we take him at his word. Now, one of the things that has been taken away from all of us in Christianity is the table. The table is the place where people gather together to find nurture. We had dinner last night, our family last night, with my niece who was here from out of state. We laughed much too hard and too long and too loud. The people were upset, I think, next to us in the table, but it was a wonderful meal. And what it was all about, it was about where we have been in our journey and how far we have come, and look at us now at this table. And you recognize the power that we have as individuals to really touch one another in a loving way that not only supports and gives life, but also nurtures us in the process. I think that's why Jesus went to the table with his disciples and did the Last Supper, as we say. And at that table, brought together all the elements of love, all the elements of healing, all the elements and possibilities of days to come, remembering the days that have been, and understanding that together we remake the world in which we live. That's this table. And what I'd like to suggest for us today, and we'll have a little bit of a meditation as we get into this, but I'd like us today to trust enough that when we take the bread, when we drink the cup, regardless of where our theology has been, trust Jesus at his word when he says, this is given for you so that you know you are loved as you are. This is given for you so that you may be healed in the compassion of God. And this is given for you to share so that you may together discover the presence of God as a source of life wherever you are. Let us step away and beyond our theologies, beyond our faith, and beyond our doubts into a moment of trust. During this communion, when we come to those words, after we do the bread, I'm going to ring the chime and ask you to think, be in that presence, feel those words, and open yourself up to that possibility. And again, after the cup, there will be a pause to consider the words that are being said and how God truly is speaking to you. We are called to be people of faith, but today, called to be people who trust. Let us not move into stone houses. Let us live beyond the stone house. Amen.